Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio.
Good morning. It's Faith Radio Mornings here on Friday, June 8th, 159th day of the year. Good to have you along. I'm Neil Stavem, sitting in today, and Logan's on the board, and school's out, Logan. High school and in elementary school's out for most kids as of today, probably, if not already. And, of course, colleges, universities done. So you just graduated a couple weeks ago, right?
I did. Walked across the stage, got that big old degree, pronounced my last name wrong as I walked.
Okay.
Just
perfect.
A beautiful experience.
Perfect, yes. That you want to have lasting memories. Do you remember anything about the commencement address?
By Susie.
Okay. You do. All right. It was just a quiz.
Right. Yeah. No, I knew I was still being tested until that degree was in my hand. I was aware of that. Yeah. No, it was a beautiful address. And I was really glad that we could hear from her because obviously she has so much great to say and said so much for so long.
Yeah. We're going to hear a little bit later today about getting booed at a commencement address. Breakpoint commentary coming up here about 25 minutes. You'll stay tuned for that. And find out why. I remember years ago hearing about Adlai Stevenson, who was in the government and spoke at a commencement address and addressed the group. He said, my job is to speak, your job is to listen. Let's hope we both end at the same time. So, all right, we've got a great hour ahead as we talk a little bit about technology and teens. It's a new study out, and Chris Martin weighs in on that. He's the millennial evangelical. We'll get his insights coming up in the second half hour. And in just a moment, Trevin Wax from the Gospel Coalition will join us. Looking forward to a visit about, what's good and true and beautiful, which is what we all long for but don't always know how to find it. We'll talk about that. Brings to mind, though, the words from Philippians 4:8. Whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. A good word for us on a Friday morning. Trevin Wax joins us in a minute. Eight past the hour on a Friday morning. Looking forward to spending a little time now with Trevin Wax, who's the Bible and Reference Publisher for Lifeway Christian Resources. He's a former missionary to Romania and hosts a blog at the Gospel Coalition and regularly contributes to the Washington Post and Religious News Service, World and Christianity Today. And I'm going to address a book he wrote, I think about a year ago, called This Is Our Time, Everyday Myths in Light of the Gospel. And it's always good to understand the time in which we live. Trevin, welcome to Faith Radio Mornings. Thanks for coming on.
Great to be with you guys. Thanks for having me.
You know, we want to jump into just some of the key points in the book and build on what's going on in culture from there. But one of the things you say early on is that Christians who shine the light of the gospel on the myths of our world do not simply say this is right and this is wrong, but this is better. I'm interested in how we as Christians can communicate this is better, because it seems like we're maybe behind on that scale in light of what the world seems to offer.
Yeah, I think sometimes we have the impression that persuading someone to follow Jesus is more of an intellectual matter, that it's we want to get people to believe certain truths about God, about the world, about the Bible, and that kind of assent to basic truth claims and truths and doctrines, that's very important. That's a major part of what Christianity is. But when you read testimonies of conversion throughout the New Testament, for example, you're struck by the fact that it's not merely intellectual persuasion. It's also something attractive, compelling about the gospel that the gospel becomes so beautiful that the scales fall off our eyes and we see the power of the gospel and the beauty of Jesus Christ, and we long for him to be our treasure. And so This Is Our Time is a book about living faithfully in our day in such a way that the beauty of the gospel is portrayed.
As I think we've spent, and maybe we feel like we need to be better prepared at sort of pointing out the false narratives, the myths, the lies. So we need to be discerning, but should we be lie detectors?
We absolutely should be discerning. And one of the things I talk about in the book is that we have to understand both the longings and the lies that are present in the narratives and the worldviews that people adopt in our society. So some Christians are really more prone to focusing on the longings. What are the longings behind why these people believe this way? And I think that is I think that is good, but you got to understand the tendency with those who focus only on longings is that eventually you basically begin to make the Christian life, make the gospel something more than it's just attached on to the longings you already have in your life without ever challenging some of the world's approaches to fulfilling those longings. And so I call that complementary Christians, because it's at some point, if you lean in that direction, you basically are prone to just sort of complimenting and affirming the world as she already is. But then there's another side of Christians. I call them lie detector Christians, who are very much aware that they need to be discerning, that they need to be able to differentiate between falsehood and truth. And they are prone to spot the lies in a worldview that comes across in a movie or that comes across in something else. And that temptation, I think, is something we should avoid, because we're not called merely to point out the lies in the beliefs of other people, but to expose lies in a way that's also showing how the gospel answers the deeper longings for why people would believe that lie in the first place. And that's where I think we've got a lot of work to do as Christians. We can't just be affirming of people's longings, and we can't just be pointing out the lies that people might believe. We need to do the deeper work of connecting, showing how the gospel challenges and exposes lies, and at the same time answers the deeper longings that are there that have led people to believe a falsehood in the first place.
If we talk about those deep longings, it seems like much of culture is focused on that. I want to satisfy those longings, those needs and desires, but we become pretty self-focused then, don't we? And I mean, isn't that one of the challenges as believers, that we, it's not just all about me and my needs.
That's true. And I think what Scripture teaches is that a lot of the needs that we have, a lot of the deepest longings that are in our hearts, they were made to be filled, but they're made to be filled by God. They're made to be filled by our relationship with Jesus Christ. They're not going to be filled by the kinds of idols that we may turn to. And so, one of the things that we have to consider, I love the quote from Augustine, 1700 years ago. We were made for God. Our hearts are restless until they find their rest in you, Lord. That's a famous quote at the beginning of his book, Confessions. But it's that idea, that restlessness, that longing, that sense of needing satisfaction and fulfillment, that's only going to come about through God, who we were made for, who we were made to glorify. And so in one sense, we'd say, well, yes, that's true. It's not all about us. We can't be the fulfiller of our own longings and dreams. We must look up, not just in, when we're looking to have those longings fulfilled.
Trevin Wax, my guest. Trevin is the Bible and Reference Publisher for Lifeway Christian Resources and blogs at the Gospel Coalition. And one of his several books is called This Is Our Time, Everyday Myths in the Light of the Gospel. And we'll take just a quick break and come back and talk more about living in today's world, the technology, a big part of that, with some Trevin's insights on phones and, you know, TVs and film and all those kinds of things, and some of what we're dealing with today in today's culture. More in a couple minutes here on Faith Radio Mornings. Past the hour on a Friday morning, and talking with Trevin Wax today. Trevin's author of a number of books, including Counterfeit Gospels, Gospel-Centered Teaching, and This Is Our Time, Everyday Myths in Light of the Gospel. And we live in lots of myths. We don't maybe even fully understand it, and lots of confusion about culture and the messages that come our way. And, of course, technology plays a big part of that, and you address that. Maybe it's not what you're looking at on your phone, but that you're always looking on your phone. Let's talk phones and technology.
Yeah, you know, the reason that I started out the book with a chapter called Your Phone is a Myth Teller is because our phones are so close to us, right? I mean, that's really the closest I can get to just our everyday life and our practices. I think the a lot of times people think, well, if I can just make sure that I'm not – there's nothing bad on my phone, or my kids aren't accessing anything bad on my phone, then we're good. We're good. The focus is on content. And maybe also, you know, the fact that a lot of people feel like, well, we need to limit the time that we have on our phone, maybe just not be on it too much. But I want to ask the deeper questions. And one of the things I'm doing in the book is I want to say, why is the phone so compelling to so many of us, and myself included in this? Why am I constantly, do I feel this itch and this urge that I need to check this or check that or be on? Or if I'm bored in the grocery checkout line, I've got to immediately whip out my phone and start looking at stuff and keep up with what's going on outside that current moment. And one of the things that I think is something we've got to reckon with is that the biggest myth that the smartphone tells us is that we are the center of the universe. I mean, just think about it. Our phones, the way we have our apps, what we have on our phones, how they are, what the settings are, how we have arranged it all, with us at all times is a device that is completely tailored to our interests and our desires. With social media accounts that have news organizations and people that largely most likely already agree with us on a lot of things. And so we're feeling affirmed in our news intake and things and the games and the things we have on our phones. They're all arranged for our own desires. And so I think we have to consider, what does that do to us as a person? You know, to have this world at our fingertips at all times, which is largely and completely revolving around us, what kind of people does that make us over time? Those habits, those practices of constantly being with that kind of device, and so, like you said, it's not just what we're looking at our phones, it's that we're always looking at our phones. That's the question that I think needs to lead to some deeper reflection about our smartphone usage.
And you know, technology of any kind, right? Whether it's film, TV, anything. I mean, we are surrounded by the idea that it's all about us, right? And we need to be more discerning in terms of our media use at every level.
Yeah, and I think one of the aspects of the phone that makes it such a source for many people, it's a source of angst and concern, is because we recognize there's something not healthy about being on our phones for hours and hours a day, constantly scrolling, swiping, you know, just where we're basically looking at this screen. We recognize that there's something wrong with the image of, you know, 20 people on a beach on vacation under different umbrellas, but, you know, the vast majority of which are all just looking at a screen instead of actually being, you know, really present in the moment. We recognize there's something here. I think one of the challenges that we face is to ask some very tough questions about what does our smartphone use, what does it do to us as human beings? In what ways does it improve our lives, but in what ways does it add hindrances and obstacles in our relationships? What does it do to friendship when we have, hundreds and hundreds, maybe even more than, thousands of Facebook friends, but no real deep relationships, with people? What does it mean for young people, for teenagers, who are, never really off, never really out of the social world? They're, you know, at school all day playing the social game there, but then coming home and there's like another 8 hours of Second Life on Instagram and, Facebook and Twitter and Snapchat and other apps. And I think those are questions that as Christians, we could lead the way here. We could lead the way here in asking questions, changing practices, doing what we need to do in order to be more fully human, more in step with the way God made us to be, and in that way, really standing out in a culture that for many in our culture don't really put a lot of thought into smartphone practices and use and what that looks like across the family.
So the book we were referencing is called "This Is Our Time: Everyday Myths in the Light of the Gospel." We've been talking about some of the myths. But maybe we need to have a better understanding or a better theology of who we are, why we're here. What does the gospel tell us? Take a couple minutes to maybe improve our theological understanding about how the gospel should shape our lives.
Yeah, at the end of the day, it's not just pointing out counterfeits and falsehoods that is what's most important. It's for us to know the truth, for us to know the scriptures. And so what I'm trying to do in This Is Our Time is to say, as Christians, if we're really going to stand out in the world, we it's not just going to be by being different in a couple of behaviors here and there or a couple of beliefs here and there. It's going to be because we have immersed ourselves in the world of the Bible. We know the storyline of the scriptures from Genesis to Revelation inside and out. We know who we are in Jesus Christ. We know who we are as God's creation, made in the image of God, but we also know who we are, in terms of God's redemption, what he has done for us through the cross and resurrection of Jesus. So we know who we are. We also know where we are, what kind of culture we live in, we need to be the kind of people who know where are the landmines in our culture? Where are the areas of our culture that are going to press in on us and try to conform us into the image of this world rather than the image of Jesus. And so as we look to being different, it's going to take us really being firmly grounded in the truths of Scripture, us knowing the songs of Scripture better than we know the songs on pop radio, knowing the stories of Scripture better than us knowing the stories that are on display in the cinema, in theaters every weekend. Us knowing God's word better than we know just sort of the trivial kinds of things that are coming across our screens all day on social media. If we really want to stand out, we're going to have to be very intentional about practices and habits that are going to lead us to a deeper, fuller, more rich engagement with the scriptures, because that ultimately is where life change is going to happen. And that's ultimately how we're going to be different from the world around us.
Take it as a good challenge for this weekend to get started, immersing ourselves in the story of the Bible, the gospel. Trevin Wax is a former missionary, author, scholar, podcaster, Bible publisher, author of the book This Is Our Time, Everyday Myths in the Light of the Gospel. You blog at the Gospel Coalition. What's your address there, Trevin?
If you just go to trevinwax.com, it will take you right to my main site there at the Gospel Coalition.
trevinwax.com. Glad to have you on today and for your continued thinking and writing this area. We look forward to having you back again down the road.
Thank you so much.
Trevin Wax here with us on Faith Radio Mornings. 27 past the hour. It's a Friday, and so we got Breakpoint coming up in a minute. We're talking a little about a significant commencement address given on this date in 1978. Here more in a minute. Thirty-two past the hour. Coming up in a few minutes, Chris Martin joins us, a regular part of the Faith Radio Mornings, the evangelical, the millennial evangelical. We'll get to his insights in a few minutes. This news today out of West Africa. Niger's president says a kidnapped U.S. missionary is still alive. Jeff Woodkey was kidnapped in the West African nation in October of 2016. Woodkey was working for a branch of Youth of the Mission when he was abducted in northern Niger. Prior to Monday, there hadn't been any news of Woodkey for 20 months. However, now the president says both Woodkey and a kidnapped German aid worker are alive. He says they're working on the conditions of their release. An item for prayer. His name is Jeff Woodkey. Been held captive since October of 2016 in Niger. All right, so we'll get update on other news and more just ahead. Thirty-seven past the hour. Coming up in a moment, we'll talk to Chris Martin, the millennial evangelical. Want to talk marriage right now, though. June Marriage Month. Been getting some insights from Amy Groeschel, wife of Craig Groeschel, and she's a speaker and author on her own. And she's talking about keeping the vow of marriage and says that it's time for a reset for people when they're tempted to stay angry with their spouse. Here's some good insight.
It's only by the grace of God and maturing in Him and remembering that I can't do this without His strength. I have got to rely on God and ask for God's help to not do these nevers, to not call Him names. And I know I have fallen into saying, hey, you're a jerk or whatever, calling Him a name. We're going to mess up. But in fighting fair from this day forward, I'm going to fight fair and I'm going to ask for God's help and do this His way and be better at listening, be better at guarding my words and be better with my emotions and seek God's help to fight by the Spirit, not by the flesh.
About fighting fair, that's the conversation from Amy and Craig Groeschel. Find the full interview on myfaithradio.com, myfaithradio.com, and find a great resource there. Not only that, but many other topics, conversations related to marriage and relationships. I encourage you to check it out, myfaithradio.com. It's 39 past the hour, and up in a minute, Chris Martin.
When kids face the uncertainty of a world that's constantly in flux, they'll have one of two responses: take control or give up altogether. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. If the things that mom and dad taught don't seem to fit in the surrounding culture, teens will often be confused and lost. At this crossroad of decision, they'll take one of two roads. First, a teen will take control. They try to control their destiny. The second path is to throw it all to the wind. They'll abandon mom and dad's values and adopt a skeptic mindset. This teen says, whatever I do doesn't matter anyway. What path is your teen taking right now? Be sure you're there to guide them in this powerful season of uncertainty.
Check out the articles, books, and parenting tips from Mark Gregston, available online at parentingtodaysteens.org.
Before the top of the hour, and it's Friday, and time to check in with Chris Martin. Chris, the millennial evangelical, he's co-creator and chief content officer at Lifeway Social, as well as an author development specialist at Lifeway. I always enjoy the conversation with Chris. Welcome back to Faith Radio, Chris.
Thanks for having me, Neil.
So, teenagers drive culture more than any other age group in the U.S. That's shocking news. Maybe not.
Yeah, maybe not. Maybe not. It's, you know, it's been noted for centuries. I've read a couple studies on how teens affect language, how young people affect language, especially young girls. In fact, it's been noted before in a number of sort of communication studies that only nerds like me would read, but that young people often drive language and drive all sorts of culture, and technology is no different. I mean, technology is ever changing so quickly. I mean, the only one of the ways I know I have a little bit of job security in what I do is because as I coach people to better use technology and social media for ministry, there's something new to talk about almost every week, and technology changes quickly already. And if we want to understand maybe how to better use technology, or perhaps even just how we may be using technology in the near future, we can look at teenagers. Teenagers, you know, as we'll talk about here in a minute, it's fair to say that perhaps many of them have an unhealthy relationship with technology, but because they use it a lot, it's particularly insightful when we look at how they use it and maybe how it affects how we'll use it in the near future. So I found that there's a new study published by the Pew Research Center whose data I've cited a lot on here and in a lot of my writing. They have so much good data both on millennials and on technology and social media and things like that, which are my main areas of study. And they released a new study just last week on teens, social media, and technology in 2018. So naturally, I was interested. Here are five of the key findings that I found. And there's a ton. I mean, it's a 10, 15 page study that they published. But here are just five of the key findings. So first is social media related. 85% of teens say they use YouTube, compared to only 51% who use Facebook and 32% who use Twitter. So 85% of teens use YouTube. The second most is Instagram at 72%. Third is Snapchat at 69%, and then Facebook and on down. Facebook has dramatically lost teenage use over the years. Now, people in social media have kind of always known that to be the case, because as we work in social media and post content and perhaps even try to reach teenagers on social media in general with whatever we're trying to create, we've seen as other social media platforms have popped up, teenagers' parents and grandparents have joined Facebook, and teenagers have fled Facebook. Now, we don't necessarily know if those two things are related. but, I mean, even when I was using Facebook and my parents started using Facebook, probably when I was in late high school or early college, just a few years after I did, I know a lot of my peers started dropping off the platform and hopping over to others. So it's not super surprising. Just a few weeks ago, Facebook launched a quote, youth portal. And if your platform is launching a youth portal, that's the first sign that you may not be reaching young people. yeah, but YouTube is huge. And I think I've talked about it on here before. I would be really concerned if I were a television company or a broadcasting company or something like that, because YouTube is only growing among teenagers. And even you could argue it's growing faster even among younger children. So that's a huge thing. Number two, 31% of teens say social media has had a, quote, mostly positive effect on people their age. So to break this out, 31% of teens say it's mostly positive, 45% it's neither positive or negative, and 24% say it's mostly negative. And I've not seen a study done on this on a broader scale beyond just teenagers. It's probably out there. I just haven't seen it. I'm guessing teenagers have a similar view as a lot of Americans. Perhaps there'd be less positive and more neutral, but I would guess most Americans are somewhere, you know, it can be positive, it can be negative. A lot of this just depends on your personal experience. I often have said it's negative, or I've often said it's neutral. I'm starting to think it's a little bit more negative, but a lot of times, you know, the negative stuff is what gets the most press. We don't think about the fact that, you know, I wouldn't have a relationship with Faith Radio if it wasn't for social media and the blogs and the internet and all of that. So a lot of times the positives of social media are ignored because the negatives can be so dramatic.
Chris, let me just jump in. We'll do a quick break here and come back and talk about some of these other findings from this Pew Research study on teenagers using technology. And there's some good insights there to draw some lessons, some applications. We'll talk more with Chris Martin in a minute. Chris is the Millennial Evangelical and a regular part of the Faith Radio Mornings here on Fridays. And it's 14 before the top of the hour. 48 past the hour on Friday morning. Chris Martin, the Millennial Evangelical from Lifeway, is with us. He's the co-creator and chief content officer at Lifeway Social. And we're talking about a new Pew study looking at teens and technology. One of the points we just touched on, Chris, is that teens say social media has had a mostly positive effect on people their age, but isn't that kind of like a fish asking to, give opinions on water? I mean, they don't know anything. They don't know anything else, right? So how would they know if it's positive or negative?
Right. That's a good point. I think, I think if I would have been asked that question, not teenager, so I wasn't asked that question, but if someone said, do you think it's mostly positive, mostly negative, or neutral? I've had social media most of the life that I can remember since I was in elementary school. We had AOL Instant Messenger, so that's a form of social media from back in the day. And I think I would just think about my personal experiences. Do I think my experiences are mostly positive? Are they mostly negative? Are they somewhere in the middle? And I tend to fall somewhere in the middle. I think overall it's having a mostly negative effect, because I think it may be seriously hurting our ability to communicate with one another in a civil way that we may, it's sort of a cancer where there are a lot of explicit negative effects that we can see, but I think a lot of people aren't taking note of how it's sort of affecting the trajectory of communication in general, which is, I think, one of the more longstanding effects that we won't necessarily see the fruit of for years.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's my take on that. But another fascinating stat, this one is probably the most notable from this study that I really spent the most time on when I wrote my blog post about this yesterday. It says 45% of teens say that they're online almost constantly, and that is up from 24% in 2014 and 15. So, almost double, 24 to 45%. So today, 45% of teens say that they're online almost constantly. And so when I read that, I was like, well, what does almost constantly really mean? And so the next most frequent option was several times a day. So almost constantly is more than several times a day. So what is that? What does almost constantly mean? Well, if you have children or you're around teenagers who have smartphones at all, you can see the image. It's a kid looking down at his or her smartphone at the dinner table, at the bus stop, in his bedroom, waiting to get into the movie theater, whatever it is. It's the constant sort of the phone head hang where your head's down looking at your phone all the time. That's what being on your phone constantly looks like. Now, I think I want to spend a couple minutes on this because I think it's important to know that I believe we're misunderstood often when we think about teenagers constantly being online, because we often think that being online, teenagers constantly being online, is a sort of vain, self-interested, maybe a sign of their unwillingness to have real face-to-face social interaction, that, oh, they just want to live on their phones all the time and talk to their friends and make goofy faces on Snapchat or post stuff on Instagram and get people's approval. It's just this vain enterprise, and it's all about them. Social media and teenagers' constant use of it is just a sign of them being more self-interested than any people that came before them. Some of that may be true from time to time. I think a lot of teenagers are probably more self-interested than generations before because they can get instant approval on social media. All of that may have some merit to it. But I think it's important that we know that for many teenagers, and this is me speaking as the youth minister at our church, so this is no data spoke to this, but this is talking to teenagers who I lead and disciple at our church and how they use the internet and social media. What my perception is, yeah, some of it's self-interested, but for many teenagers, I think being online almost constantly is simply a means of social survival. If they don't consume the content of their friends and create their own content on social media, they run the risk of becoming social outcasts, not just online, but in the hallways at school too. So here's an example of why a teen may be online constantly. And I've gathered this from my conversations with teenagers. So for example, a teenager may be snapping back and forth with friends on Snapchat, and while waiting for friends to respond, they hop over to Instagram to catch up on their friends' stories or other things that they posted. They got to make sure that they like their friends' images on Instagram pretty quickly because teenagers pay attention to how quickly they get a certain number of likes. And if they don't get a certain number of likes in 5 or 10 minutes, they'll delete the image because they feel like their friends don't like them. So the teenager probably feels social pressure to go like their friend's pictures on Instagram really quickly, but they want to then stop over to YouTube to make sure that their favorite creator hasn't posted something in the last 15 or 20 minutes because they might miss out on an inside joke that a friend is snapping back and forth about in Snapchat. So they check YouTube, but hold on, their favorite creator posted something, but they just got a new snap from a friend and they got to go respond to that really. So this cycle just continues and continues and continues all day, every day. And they feel like a hamster in a wheel having to keep up so that when they stop at the lunch table or they see each other in between classes, they don't feel like they're missing out on key social communication and social experiences. And I think a lot of this isn't necessarily enjoyable for teenagers, but it's almost socially enslaving. You know what I mean?
I'm worn out just as you describe it, you know, and Logan, our engineer, is saying this is what he lives. This is his nightmare, living every day through this. We won't have time to get through all maybe those the rest of the point, but it's maybe a good time to talk about, you know, Apple the other day came out and they're talking about some efforts to reduce the addictive behavior of this. Is that really going to address, you know, a teen's means for social survival?
Yeah, I don't really think so. Apple has a better moral compass than a lot of tech companies today. When it comes to what I mean by that is when it comes to the use of their products. So like a lot of social companies engineer their products to be addictive. And Apple, I think, has shown evidence of doing that in the past, but they've realized, okay, this is having negative social effects and we need to try to combat that. And they've always been good at protecting user data, much better than companies like Facebook or otherwise. And so I applaud Apple for these efforts, but I think the point that you kind of made in your question is right. I don't know that, you know, this is good and Apple should be doing this to try to help curb smartphone use, but smartphone use is more than just an addictive sort of thing that an Apple app could help regulate. No Apple app can fix the social ostracism, I guess, that a teen may feel if he or she does not interact with his or her friends on social media. So I think I really think Apple's attempt they announced this past week at their Worldwide Developers Conference to create a function on the phone that would, you know, help signal people, hey, you've been using this a lot or you've been on your phone a lot. Maybe it's time to take a break. That's great. I really applaud them for doing that. I just don't know, because of the conversation we just had about why people use their phones, especially young people, I just don't know how effective it's actually going to be.
And a reminder, I guess, for parents that this is the world in which our kids are living in, and, you know, many of us as well. But we do need to be we need some wisdom in how to handle interacting and setting guidelines and limits.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And it's and I think what's important that this sometimes goes. Yeah. Like, I'm not a parent, so take my parenting advice, quote unquote, with a grain of salt. But I think, yes, it is important for parents to limit their kids' technology use in general, whether that's TV, computer, phone, or whatever. But I think it is important for parents to understand the dynamic that I just described about, understand that your child, your teenager, may be on their phones all the time because they feel like they'll be left out if they aren't. And that doesn't mean you let them stay on their phone necessarily, but it just means that maybe you have a conversation with them about that and help them figure out other ways to stay connected with their friends that aren't necessarily social media based. So I think it's just good for parents to understand that dynamic.
Check out Chris's writing about the Pew Research study. You can find Chris, the millennial evangelical, Chris Martin, co-creator and chief content officer at Lifeway Social and author development specialist at Lifeway. Always good to talk with you, Chris. Thanks for coming back on with us.
Thanks. It was fun.
It's 57 past the hour. You got just a minute left to wrap up the show, and we'll do that coming up. A great morning. Bible teaching is just ahead with Colin Smith Unlocking the Bible coming up here after the news. Thanks so much for tuning in to Faith Radio Mornings. I'm Neil Stavem. Have a great weekend.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.